3. The goal, destroying education in the East and West. With the aim of corrupting education in the West, communism can wait hundreds of years if necessary and achieve its goal over generations of change through progressive education. China has 5,000 years of profound cultural traditions. However, owing to specific historical conditions at the time the communists came to power, they were able to use the Chinese people's mentality of quick success and instant benefit. This induced the Chinese people to adopt radical means that rapidly separated them from tradition in a matter of decades. In this manner, communism achieved its goal of corrupting education and humanity in China. At the beginning of the 20th century, when Dewey's progressive education began to corrode the United States, his ethnic Chinese followers returned to China and became pioneers of modern Chinese education. British cannons had destroyed the self-esteem of the Chinese people, and the intellectuals were eager to find a way to strengthen the nation. The communists exploited these conditions to set off a so-called new culture movement that repudiated China's traditions. The movement attacked culture and was a rehearsal of the Cultural Revolution of the 1960s. The new culture movement has three main representatives: Dewey's disciple, Hu Shi, Chen Duxiu, one of the founders of the Chinese Communist Party, and Lu Xun, who was later praised by Mao Zedong as the chief commander of China's Cultural Revolution. Li Dezhao, another founder of the Chinese Communist Party, also adopted an important role in the cultural movement of the later period. Criticizing China for the faults of its traditional path of development, the New Culture Movement attributed China's accumulated weakness over the past 100 years to traditional Confucian culture and advocated abolishing Confucianism. Traditional culture was viewed as old culture, while all Western culture was treated as new. Traditional beliefs were criticized for not adhering to the ideas of science and democracy. This movement was the forerunner to the heated May 4th movement, and started the first wave of thorough subversion of traditional ethics and values. At the same time, it laid the foundation for Marxism to invade China from the West, allowing it to take root, sprout, and grow. In education, among the greatest harm wrought by the New Culture Movement was the campaign to promote the vernacularization of written Chinese. As advocated by Hu Shi, Chinese language education in primary schools was changed to the teaching of vernacular written Chinese. As a result, after one generation, the majority of Chinese people were hardly able to read and understand classical Chinese. This meant that the Book of Changes, the Spring and Autumn Annals, Tao Te Ching, Yellow Emperor's Inner Classic, Huang Dine Jing, and other traditional books were now inaccessible to the ordinary student. Instead, they were treated as esoteric content for the specialized research of scholars. China's 5,000 years of glorious civilization was turned into mere decoration. In the development of Chinese culture, it was divinely arranged that the written classical Chinese language be separated from the spoken language. In China, over the course of history, there have been many large-scale assimilations of different ethnic groups and multiple relocations of China's cultural center of gravity, thus the spoken language was constantly changing. But due to the separation between the spoken language and classical Chinese used in writing, classical Chinese remained largely unchanged. Qing Dynasty students could still read and understand Song Dynasty, Tang Dynasty, and even pre-Qin Dynasty classics. This allowed traditional Chinese culture and literature to be transmitted unbroken over thousands of years. However, communism caused the Chinese people to sever their cultural roots through the language. At the same time, by combining the written language with the spoken language, it became easier to mix in deviant words and phrases, thus pushing the Chinese people yet further away from tradition. The literacy campaigns and popularization of culture in elementary education that were undertaken by the Chinese Communist Party (CCP) before and after its establishment subjected their captive audience to direct and explicit brainwashing. For instance, the first few phrases learned by students in literacy classes and the first year of primary school were propaganda like "Long live Chairman Mao," "The evil old society," and "Evil American imperialism," phrases that fully exemplify the clear hate-based class struggle ethos the party demanded. Compared with deviant ideas that progressive education mixes into children's books, like "Heather Has Two Mommies," although the two movements differ starkly in method, they are both essentially a form of ideological indoctrination imposed on the young. Chinese children who were educated in this way grow up to defend the CCP's tyrannical regime of their own initiative, vilifying and lambasting people who talk about universal values. Children educated in the Western environment grow up to be part of the angry student mobs that prevent speakers from talking about traditional values and accuse them of discrimination. Not long after the CCP established its regime, it began its thought reform campaign against intellectuals, focusing on university campuses and high schools. Its main objective was to reform intellectuals' perspectives on life, force them to forsake traditional moral principles, and give up the philosophy of first improving oneself, then extending that to one's family, state, and the world. It used a Marxist class-based view of the world and life, from the perspective of the proletariat class. Professors of the old generation, in particular, have to repeatedly criticize themselves, confess, and accept being informed on, monitored, and criticized by their colleagues and students. They were even made to acknowledge and eliminate counter-revolutionary thoughts in their own subconscious minds, which were called aggressions against the proletariat class. Of course, this was much more intense than the sensitivity training of today. Some were unable to take the humiliation and stress and committed suicide. Subsequently, the CCP began adjusting faculty and departments in universities. It greatly diminished, merged, or eliminated departments like philosophy, sociology, and those related to the humanities, leaving many comprehensive universities with only Soviet-style science and engineering faculties. This was because the CCP was unable to tolerate the threat to its tyrannical rule from any independent ideological perspectives on politics and social issues. These were associated with the humanities-related faculties, which had academic freedom in the days of the Republic of China. At the same time, Marxist politics and philosophy were made mandatory for all students. The entire process was completed within 2 to 3 years. In the West, communism took an entire generation to establish new disciplines with the aim of ideological indoctrination and the injection of Marxist thought into universities. Although the speed differed greatly between the two, they achieved similar results. In 1958, the CCP started its education revolution, which had the following notable features. Firstly, education was emphasized as a tool that should be used in service of the proletariat. Under the leadership of the party committee, students were organized to prepare the curricula and teaching materials. In the Chinese language department of Peking University, 60 students spent 30 days to write a 700,000-character treatise called The History of Chinese Literature. This fully exemplified what progressive education was about. The teaching methods should be student-centric, focused on exploratory learning and cooperative learning, that is, what to learn and how to learn it were all to be discussed and decided by the students themselves. The objective was clear, eliminating superstitious beliefs in authority figures, which was meant to instill an attitude opposed to tradition, magnifying students' self-centeredness, and laying the foundation for rebellion during the Cultural Revolution to come. Secondly, the union of education and productive labor was to be emphasized. Every school had its own factory, and during the height of the Great Leap Forward, teachers and students smelted steel and tilled the land. Even a university that had previously focused on social disciplines, like Renmin University of China, operated 108 factories. In name, this was to let students learn by doing, but in fact students learned nothing. In the subsequent Cultural Revolution, students were mobilized to destroy all forms of cultural heritage associated with traditional culture, be they tangible or intangible, see Chapter 6 for details. This again echoes the counterculture movement that took place in the West. After the Cultural Revolution started, Mao Zedong felt that the situation of bourgeois intellectuals ruling the schools should not continue. On June 13, 1966, the CCP issued a notice to reform university admissions and started the corrective action campaign. University entrance exams were abolished, and large numbers of worker peasant soldier students were enrolled. The film Breaking with Old Ideas, produced during the Cultural Revolution, reflected the reason for this reform. A youth who grew up in a poor farm is not sufficiently literate, but the calluses on his hands from hard farm work qualify him for enrollment. A school principal said, "Can you blame us for their low level of literacy? No. This debt should be settled with the nationalists, the landowners, and the capitalist class, the oppressors." In the West, there was a professor who published a paper claiming that mathematics exams lead to racial discrimination, because students of certain ethnic minority groups have lower math scores compared to white students. Another professor published a paper that said math standards based on the higher scores achieved by male students leads to gender discrimination against females when they are held to the same standard, qualifying students for the university level based on the calluses they have, and attributing lower math scores to racial and gender discrimination, are all methods that communism uses to dumb down students and stunt their intellectual growth. After the Cultural Revolution, China resumed its university entrance examination. From then on, this exam has become a key part of the education system and the ultimate objective of primary and high school education. Under this utilitarian education system, many students became machines that learned only how to pass exams, without the ability to think independently for themselves or to distinguish right from wrong. At the same time, Marxist philosophy, politics, and economics have stubbornly remained mandatory exam subjects. In the minds of students who are cut off from tradition, right and wrong and good and evil are all evaluated according to communist standards. Thus, after the 9/11 terrorist attack occurred, many students cheered. Primary school students declare that they want to become corrupt officials when they grow up. University students prostitute themselves and become surrogate mothers for cash. Communism has hijacked the younger generation.